You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 17 September, we've got local and U.S. consumer confidence data later today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Gordon Whitten from Anchor. We're going to touch on Adobe. I've got Harry Kellen, he's CEO of FNB. We'll talk numbers, particularly consumers. And J.D. Hayward from Flagship Asset Management. Why U.S. consumer matters to SA investors, and why? How are the U.S. consumers doing? This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: three companies with impairment risk. Keith McLachlan shares his process to find impairment risks on the JSE. And Business Day, Bank of International Settlement warns central banks not to cut too fast. Yeah, guys, do not spoil our party here. Morning markets, yours was mixed. S&P up 0.1%. The Nasdaq is down 0.5%. The East is mixed. Sydney down 0.2%. Tokyo down 2.1%. Hong Kong is up 1.5%. And 10 cents up 1% after being down about 5% very early this morning. Commodities are mixed. Gold, 2,606. Brent green, 7,308. Platinum, 991. Palladium green at 1,090. The Rand is 1,762. Bitcoin, 58,100. Top 40 opening call, 35 points to the green. That's about, 0.05%.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Karen Whitten from Anchor. Karen, appreciate the early morning time. Adobe, I think one of the first sort of software as a service businesses a decade or so for their Photoshop. I remember the software costing easy 10,000 Rand, and then suddenly for $10 a month, you could get it all. And results last week. This is a stock you and your colleagues keep a close eye on.
Good morning, Simon. Good to be on the show again. Adobe is one of those companies that if you've used their products, you'll know all about it. But if you haven't, then you might not know a whole deal about it. And it's so they generate 92% of their revenue through recurring revenue as a subscription. And that is something that we really like because it's a sticky business model, making it difficult for users to go out it once they actually start using it. And like you've said, it's normally mostly creative software for designers. And then they've also got several business solutions like marketing automation and analytics. And of course, I think most of us will be familiar with their Adobe Acrobat. Yeah, for PDF products. And along with that, you know, it's a model that has very high margins as well as significant pricing power. So it is a long-term compounder. But Simon, surprisingly, in the last 5 years, it's actually only just outperformed the S&P 500. It sold off with the rest of tech in 2022 and then rallied last year with the AI frenzy. And then it sold off at the start of this year due to concerns that companies like Meta or Alphabet could start to take into Adobe's market share due to maybe Adobe falling behind in their AI offerings. But now in the last 3 months, again, it's rallied as they have actually shown that they are able to incorporate AI technology into users' everyday lives. And so it's been thrown around by narratives in the past few years, but it is a long-term story that we do indeed like.
I noticed because the results, when I look at them simply, you know, sort of top line, bottom line, the numbers weren't bad. The market seemed not to buy them. I'm a user of their product, Firefly's their AI. It's not bad. I mean, it certainly is perfectly adequate compared to the DALL-E 3s and the like. And they're bringing a video AI generator as well. Was it the AI concerns that sold it off in results, which, as I say, I thought looked fairly good from at first splash?
Yeah, Simon. So I think there's probably two headwinds at play, if I could think of them, to do with the Adobe results. The first is really that any signs of weakness from after results and any signs of a recession or slowdown that the companies are showing has been really severely punished by the market. And I think the 9% hit on that front does look slightly overdone, as we do think it is a fantastic business. And then, like I said earlier, I think the second potential headwind is this AI threat? You know, we all hearing about the positives of AI, but that's where there's no real competition, like the NVIDIAs of the world. But, you know, we still, or the market is still a bit uneasy about potential competition from competitors, like I've said, for Adobe's products. And they did a try to acquire a company called Figma last year.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually terminated the acquisition because the market, I think, thought that they were overpaying for it. But that as well were signs that they are looking to acquire potential competitors. So I think with this ever-changing AI landscape, it is tough to know what's gonna, like, what the industry will be like in the next 3 to 6 months. But the market right now is deciding whether or not Adobe can actually stay on top of this AI. And yeah, I guess we'll wait and see. We are positive because, mm-hmm. like I've said, it is a sticky business model. But, you know, Simon, the AI is making things quite interesting at the moment. So we'll wait and see.
I take your point. I mean, there's some very clear winners out there for now, OpenAI, one of them, and by proxy, Microsoft. But how this plays out over, I don't know, the next year, 10 years is another whole ballgame. We'll leave it there. Gerrin Witten, anchor, appreciate the early morning insights.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Harry Kellum, CEO of FNB. Of course, group results were out for FirstRand on Thursday. That was for the year ending June. Harry is, of course, CEO at FNB. Harry, appreciate the time today. Impairments, I have to say, in the FNB stable have been way better than I would have thought a year or two ago looking forward. I'm imagining this is less about a consumer and more about your lending policies that you've had over the last year or two to keep those impairments well within your through the cycle top of the range.
Morning, Simon. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be on the show. Simon, so on an impairment side, at F&B level, we were up 50% for the 12 months to June. Mm. But it's coming, as you say, it's coming off a lower base. And the primary reason is it was a strategy that we had adopted into COVID, and in fact, even just post-COVID timeframe. So we were actually quite conservative in that period. We said we are unsure of how the economy will play out. So we actually will only service our own customers and if really needed. So our book actually didn't grow much. What happened post then, as we all know, is the interest rates cycle actually came in and you had a steep increase in interest and inflation.
Yeah.
So when we wrote business, we wrote where we were better informed in terms of where the economy and rate cycle were. We could not have predicted the extent of the increase of both. So we would still have impairments coming in, but it was more the time frame coming in. So we only started writing towards early 2022, in all fairness, in terms mm-hmm. of coming back to advances in a true sense. But Simon, having said that, our consumers, we do see strain. We can see it in debt counseling, we can see strain as well.
We can see strain. I mean, absolutely. It's been, we can go back to, March of 2020. It was pandemic, and then it was inflation, then it was interest rates. It's been really, really a tough number of years. We've got the MPC on Thursday. Expectation is for a cut. And for someone with a home loan, even if it's only a quarter of a percent, that immediately makes the household finances just that little bit better. Or is there going to be still more lag and perhaps more upside in impairments?
So short answer on the impairment stuff, there will be, we don't think upside in terms of increasing impairments. We mm-hmm. think we're near the peak, but Simon, you're right. It won't come down dramatically with a 25 cut. Our house view is 25 now, 25 the next one, and 25 sometime in the first half of next year. Mm. And then our view is 75. But for sure, two things will happen is that, as you quite rightly say, home loans is actually a big cost to any of our customers.
Yeah.
That 25 bps will make a difference. I think it's a bigger difference is that actually it's a signal of a change in the rate cycle. And I think that also brings in a different level of confidence into individuals. Also a change in terms of mindset to say, okay, there is no negative surprises hitting me again from an interest rate perspective.
Yeah, 100%. It's that psychology of it. And I think if you throw load shedding into that and a successful GNU, suddenly it's lovely being a South African after it's been a tough couple of years there. How have deposits been? We've certainly seen high interest rates, which means you could put some money in a bank account, in a savings account, and actually get a decent interest rate. Did consumers respond to that, or has the pressure just been too much on them?
No, so in fact, consumers did respond. It was also a specific strategy from F&B for our customers.
Mm-hmm.
So our overall deposits, so I'm not talking retail and commercial customers, grew 10% for the 12 months. But when you look at what has been growing in the current accounts, it was only 2%. Now, if you say, where's the rest going? Actually, we encourage customers to go to our savings products. Mm-hmm. They don't have to get stuck in the saving products for too long. So sometimes our customers assume they got a lock-in. Yes, there is different products. You got a 6-month fixed deposit, yep. You got a 32-day notice, or even a money market account that you can have access instantaneously, but you can earn better interest. And we've been on a continual drive to our customers to be able to, if we see money there, we will then inform them around, here's products that's good for you. So we've seen, I mean, on our retail customers, that investment book grew by 11%, and our commercial, that grew by 15%.
And in a very competitive space, banking broadly, particularly sort of the F&B, the person in the street, you saw customer acquisition, which every time I look at bank results, I think that's it. There's no one left in South Africa to join a bank, yet somehow it's happening.
Simon, yes. The one thing for sure, I don't think we all count customers the same way. However, for us, it's more our trend line against us. I always tell people, if you're consistent, it doesn't matter if you're consistent, you're wrong. Mm. If you measure consistency, you get a trend line, you get a story behind it. So you're right. We did grow customers. I mean, our retail customers were up 4% and our commercial customers were up 5%, and that's net growth in customers. So we do lose customers as well. So unfortunately, we do. We like to retain as many customers and sell to new customers, but this is a net growth. And we think, I mean, FNB does go out to market quite strongly in terms of our digital capability.
Yeah.
And it does resonate to our customers. We know our rewards program in eBucks also resonates with customers, and we do actively reward customers across the piece. And that's how we always look to see what can we give value to our customers. It's not only a price play, to be honest, Simon. So we always look at it from a customer lens. Are we servicing their needs across the spectrum? So banking has actually moved to banking plus financial services.
Yeah.
And we offer all of that, investment products, insurance, life insurance, short term. But we look at it from a lens of, what are the customer needs? What do they need from us? And how best can we deliver? Some customers like to go out branches. So we still have branches, and we do sales in our branches as well. But I mean, we do see ongoing acquisition, especially on our digital channels.
How's cost pressure been? I mean, you know, we were talking high rates. Of course, that was preceded by high inflation. That has come down. It's almost at the governor's 4.5%. It's well within the 3 to 6, but the governor always wants 4.5. How have your operational cost pressures been?
F&B has been really good in operational cost performance. So we recognize that, in fact, we're coming with the impairments coming off a lower base. We knew impairments were going to be a strain on our results. Mm-hmm. So F&B South Africa was flat in terms of earnings. F&B totality, which is including our subsidiaries in broader Africa, we were up 1%. So it's a resilience of results when you compare impairments were up 50%. Mm-hmm. Apart from good interest growth, which means we service customers' deposits and advances. And in fact, our fee income as well was low single digits, but it does tell you effectively we gave back fees to our customer. So with that strain, I mean, our non-interest was up 5%. Our fee and commission, which is just the fee account, was up 4%. And that was because of about almost R1 billion give back to feedback. The business knew the pressure they were in, and they did a very good job in terms of cost containment. So our cost growth was actually 1%. Wow. Which then gives you the capacity to be able to withstand giving away fees as well as the impairment. And that was, we didn't do any major thing in terms of headcount, which was like, we have attrition on headcount. Don't replace if you really don't need to. It's more from a, are we serving customers? If it's this role that actually will impact customers, please replace. If this is a role that's not, see if we can actually come and spread the load within other staff members. And in which case, we did have a reduction in our headcount.
We leave it at Harry Killen, he's CEO of FNB. Appreciate the time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with JD Hayward, fund manager, Flagship Asset Management. JD, good to chat again. US consumers, who, in a note that you put out, are 67% of the US economy's growth, which is, I knew it was a big number. I didn't know it was that big a number. It really does make them hugely important to the US economy and ultimately the global economy. And as I said, a lot more than I would have thought.
Hi, Simon. Yes, that's correct. I mean, the US consumer is by far the biggest driver of the US economy. And we all know the size of the US economy in relation to the rest of the world. So, I mean, by that extent, you know, what happens to the US consumer really does have a large effect on economies across the world and also on, you know, investment portfolios.
And the data that you put out, I mean, it is a mixed picture. I mean, you had some points that are positive, job market, GDP growth, retail sales. On the flip side, there are points to worry about. I mean, for example, we talk job growth, but of course, unemployment has hit 4.3% with some fairly significant revisions downwards. It is a mixed bag, I suppose.
That is absolutely the case. I mean, if it's a difficult question to answer exactly where the US consumer finds himself at the moment. Like you mentioned there, you've got some strong numbers, you know, real wage growth across different income brackets, you know, so that's good. Unemployment rates at about 4.2, 4.3, historically quite low, but it is increasing. Mm-hmm. Then you've also got something like very strong US household balance sheets. You know, they've been buoyed by rising asset prices over the last 4 or 5 years in the US. So might be feeling pretty confident based on that. But then on the downside, I mean, you've got the unemployment rate increasing slightly, and then you've got something like, you know, credit card debt, which is rising at a much faster clip than overall US debt. So that really is not very healthy because you're maintaining spending with what we call bad debt, basically.
And then, I mean, as an investor, you know, if you could have given me a nice binary answer one way or the other, it makes life easier. This makes life a little bit more challenging. And then you gave some ideas. One of them was emerging winners. And a stock which I actually heard about, I think, earlier this year, Sprouts Farmers Market, which sounds weird, but that kind of like gets into the evolving consumer trends that are changing, and they're just in the right spot. And it's been a spectacular performance over the last year.
Yes, it has. I mean, they've outperformed their kind of staples peers by leaps and bounds. And I think it's because they find themselves at sort of, you know, almost the intersection of a few different sectors. So while they are technically a staple, it's almost more of a discretionary spend. And then you've got a healthcare segment on or angle on that as well, because they really cater to, you know, healthy living, healthy eating. And it's been the complete opposite of something like, you know, Heineken or Diageo. These normal consumer staple, you know, titans that we've seen have really struggled over the last year. So I think they really just find themselves in that sweet spot.
And that's just it. I mean, if a consumer, you know, if maybe we can't pin down the US consumer, but there certainly are some worrying flags. So those sort of traditional consumer staples, and as you mentioned, haven't done well and, you know, are probably going to be sort of mixed going forward at best.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You've seen in the last 2 weeks, I think, some real household staple names like Dollar General and Dollar Tree, they've been absolutely smashed on weak numbers, you know, something that you wouldn't really expect in this environment. You would almost expect if the consumer is starting to struggle, you know, they will be down trading and those types of companies would benefit, which is not what we've seen. So it really is a mixed bag out there at the moment.
And then does it, to a degree, back to good old-fashioned things like a strong balance sheet, a global exposure so that you've got US consumer exposure, but you've also got other markets which might be offsetting it. It's sort of almost going back to the core of investing.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, it just presents challenges and opportunities. So you might find companies with, you know, less exposure to the US, more exposure to the US, you know, in different or in the same peer group, but with sort of different end markets. And there you'll find opportunities depending on what happens with the US consumer going forward.
Where does it leave tech? Because tech is Apple is obviously a consumer, but it, like an Nvidia isn't. I mean, are they sort of immune or should we sort of be careful there as well? I'm thinking Microsoft. We all use Word, but of course, you know, Azure is a big money spinner.
Yeah, I mean, that is a fantastic question. If you find a foolproof answer to that, please let me know. I think a lot of big tech at the moment, you know, it's driven by almost enterprise spend, not necessarily that much by consumer spend. And I mean, that is also a worrying thing in itself, because if you look at Nvidia or Microsoft and a Meta, I mean, these guys are basically driving each other's capex.
Yeah.
And that can only go on for, you know, for so long. At some stage, you will reach a point where a Meta and a Google and a Microsoft have now got enough NVIDIA chips, you know, and what happens then? That does leave the companies somewhat vulnerable. How that plays out exactly is a very good question.
And of course, you know, yes, they're enterprise, but ultimately enterprise ends up at consumers. It just depends how long that chain is. We'll leave it at JD Hayward, Fund Manager, Flagship Asset Management. Always appreciate the time. A poll today, I forgot to mention it when we were chatting with Kieran, talking around Adobe Software as a Service. Is that a stock in your portfolio? As I said, I use the product. I'd never really looked at the share. And as he says, it's beaten the market but not by a heck of a lot. And yesterday's poll, we were chatting with Ravan Rupana Rain, who from PwC South Africa, their first half banking report, and particularly focusing on results. We asked you how you thought the banks were doing. Over half said doing good in a tough market. Quarter said fair at best. The rest said need to try harder. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, a shrinking JSE.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.